DangerousRobPunk.com.
And by his side with pride, this is Couch Potato Mike, and how are you doing this week, sir?
Not too terribly bad. Still on the hunt for a new job.
Oh, any leads?
No, I called a shitty fast food restaurant and left a message for the hiring manager. Because I just need a couple bucks, really. I don't need much money.
Good. I was actually going to ask you if you'd been calling it back any of your applications.
I just started. You know what? People say you should always call in. When I was a manager, and I was in charge of hiring, obviously, because I hired for my departments.
Uh-huh.
If you called me and asked about your application, I pretty much put you on the do not call list. Like,
well, that's just because you're a dick.
It annoyed me, like, having to, like, stop whatever I was doing, go find a phone somewhere, answer it. Hey, this is James. What can I do for you? Oh, I put in an application. Let me trace your personnel. Click. Well,
that's because you worked for fucking Walmart, dude. Any other place is not going to be some giant corporate monster that can't be bothered by somebody who's desperate to get a damn job, even if they're getting underpaid slave wages to do humiliating work.
Yeah. So.
In blue.
It just annoyed me.
My least favorite color on the planet.
I really want to work for Target, just so I can wear red.
Well, you should.
There's not a Target anywhere close by.
Oh, that's your damn fault.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, I mean, and we'll talk about it later, but there was
Target.
I've been staying fairly warm in the tiny house.
You've been spooning with Jorny, haven't you?
My cat does sleep in my hammock with me, which is really cute, but he hates it when I roll over. Well, he gets pissed and jumped off.
It's a fucking hammock.
Yeah. Or if I move at all, he just gets angry. I have used the heaters. I have two heaters. I usually never use them. I have one electric heater, little tiny space heater, and then I have one. The electric heater actually came from my apartment. I just kind of borrowed it. Never returned that. I did leave those some nice presents though in the apartment.
Oh yeah, I've heard about the presents you left in your apartment.
Yeah, I mean just the futon that was busted.
You know, they came in there and like motherfucker.
Oh, that backpack that had the weighted sandbags in it.
Oh, for the love of God!
I left that in there. Yeah,
they called the cops. I think he's got a dead hooker chopped up in here.
So I really have only had to run the heat only at night, and then only all night on the one night that it got down to 4 degrees.
Oh, good God!
I left the kerosene heater going all night for that.
I got in my car that frickin' morning, and it said 1 degree on my thermometer.
I think it did go down that low. Originally, it was supposed to get down to like -2, and I was like, "No, that's terrible." I mean, for the most part, during the daytime, I just kind of opened the windows because my house is south facing with two giant windows on the south side, which warms it up really nice. So usually, what I do is about like 5 a.m, it gets super cold, even though I use an electric pad. So I stay pretty toasty. But
why do south facing windows help warm it up?
Because the hemisphere we're in, the sun is brightest facing south. So if you're on the north side of a hill, you get almost no sun.
Okay.
Sun goes east to west.
Mm-hmm.
Facing, so south gets the most solar exposure throughout the day.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Whereas north gets the least amount.
And I imagine.
And east would be the second, you know, or west.
Right.
Yeah, so southwest would be the warmest.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
And northeast, you would have a chilly spot.
It happens.
Yeah. So that, and I still have the problem of running water is not installed yet.
Oy.
Which is why I brought like a bunch of 2-liter bottles here with me today to fill up with water.
I saw that bag of 2-liter bottles in the kitchen.
Yes. I'm down to, I have one of those big jugs that they use in like corporate water fountains.
Mm-hmm.
So I have one of those that I opened yesterday that I've been using. So it's pretty full and, I have a little bit of the water. Bathing, you know, I come over here and bathe when I do a podcast. Not today, because I took a shower yesterday. Day before yesterday, yeah. So, I'm good for now. If it was springtime, I would just go down to the creek and jump in it.
Down to the old creek.
Yeah, so I need to get the water fixed and the water installed pretty soon. The bathroom, I did a little bit of work in that. The kitchen's coming along. I'm going to... I'm going to run a 2x4 above my kitchen. So I'm going to put storage above sort of the countertops.
Mm-hmm.
So I have stuff up there, like the stuff I don't use that often, I can just shove up there on top of that.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
I mean, and then the 2x4 that's going to support that top, you know, like sort of storage loft, I'm going to put hooks in it so I can hang my pots and pans above there out of my way. And they're right there, I can grab them. But yeah.
But let's talk about that a little bit more when we get to our main topic.
Absolutely.
And let's see, coming up on the show today, we are going to be talking about prepping for the extreme cold, the U.S. retail industry collapsing, small space prepping. In our Gadget Punk Corner, we're going to be reviewing the book After the Crumble.
Sort of a preview more than a review, but...
Okay, and then in Nutrition Punk, we're going to be talking about 9 more calorie myths, as well as our Permaculture Minute, our Wild Edible of the Week, all of our wonderful sponsors, starting with JMBullion.com.
JM Bullion, the place that you should be getting your gold and silver. Online, the best prices, free shipping,
great people. You sounded questionable about that silver.
No, well, it's questionable about the gold. I am no longer a possessor of gold. I sold off my gold and paid my cell phone bill.
I know, but you look like somebody put in a question mark on the teleprompter.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Like gold and silver?
Yeah, but if you are getting gold and silver, which I think you should, it's a great monetary hedge. And it's a good, like I just said, I sold off my gold that I'd bought for a good price to help pay a bill. Mm-hmm. Which I don't like to sell off my silver. I've never sold silver. I've traded it.
Right.
Usually for other silver. But I don't like to sell off my silver. The gold was just some crappy little coins that I happen to have, and I got 70, 80 bucks off of them.
Yeah, there's only one piece of silver out there that I'm wanting these days. I doubt they have it on JM Bullion, don't they? What's that? The one you were telling me about, that Doctor Who silver.
Oh, yeah. It's like 100 bucks or something, because it's 10 ounces.
I mean, yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I would love to be holding that in my hand just so I could look at a piece of silver and be like, you suck.
That is. It's like that big. It's 10-ounce coin. It's a huge coin. Mm. And it comes... I'll show you a picture later. Where's your silver coin at? Oh, there it is.
It's right here. My silver dime. It's it's basically a permanent ornament on the pod board.
Yeah. And just as an aside, I still actually carry some silver coins with me all the time, because you never know when you got to make a crazy barter or whatnot. So
absolutely. So if you want your silver coins, you go to survivalpunk.com. Find the banner on the right-hand side marked for JM Bullion. Click there and start making the wisest investments you'll make that day.
Absolutely.
And while you're over there at that banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com, find the little spot marked for campingsurvival.com.
The place that you go for all of your bug out and bug in needs. The home for the cheapest fish antibiotics on the internet with free shipping. The life straw that me and Mike have used to drink from the cattle pond full of poo. And we live to tell the tale.
Yeah, I'm not doing that again.
You're just a scaredy cat.
You just like drinking poo water.
The life straw filters out the poo, so that's good. So campingsurvival.com, go to survivalpunk.com, click the banner in the right-hand margin, and show them some love so they'll renew whenever their renewal date comes up, which I need to check.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
oh, okay, yeah.
I think JM Bullion and Camping Survival are getting close to renewal dates.
Oh, okay. Well, enough about that end of our little lives here. Now, so let's just jump right into that guy.
Let's tuck right in.
Yeah, let's stumble right into our first news story, prepping for extreme cold. Where does this news story come from?
This comes from prepblog.com.
Holy shit, it's contagious.
Prep minus blog.
Prep minus, that's a hyphen, not a minus sign.
It's the same thing on the keyboard.
Well, now you're just talking semantics.
Yeah. Prepping for extreme cold, which I thought was very relevant from, you know, the extreme cold we've been having.
Yes,
you did. Which, it's actually supposed to get warmer this week. I'm super excited.
We haven't been having extreme cold. We had extreme cold for one damn day.
Yeah.
And then fucking Mother Nature looked down and was like, oh shit, that's Tennessee. They don't get cold.
Yeah. Still snow dome in effect, though. Here's the story at weather.com. Arctic cold blast continues. Wind chill alerts for over half the U.S. population. Holy crap. Look,
The combination of wind and cold air is leading to a dangerous and potentially life-threatening wind chills Wednesday over a large part of the Midwest. Wind chills have dipped as low as 54 degrees below zero in Grand Marais, Minnesota. I want to be Marquis. Grand Marquis. Wednesday morning. Unlike the other Arctic chill that ended in 2014, this cold blast will bypass the west and plunge south and east, bringing below freezing temperatures all the way to the Gulf Coast by Thursday morning. And just looking at this map here, you guys can't see this picture.
It's all purple.
Yeah.
What is
Duluth? Duluth, Montana?
That's Minnesota, you
Duluth,
get.
Minnesota is negative 28.
Montana's not even on this map.
Is it not? Right.
Actually,
over here?
No, that's Montana.
Yeah.
These are the Dakotas.
So yeah, there's, oh my God, just chilly. Indianapolis, negative 15. Marquette, negative 18. Some tips on prepping for the extreme cold weather. The most dangerous time to be without electrical power is during winter, especially when the temperatures are particularly low. If your house loses power and heat, the interior temperatures fall gradually. That's true. So you'll be okay for a number of hours, but not a number of days. Yeah, once it gets low, the flywheel effect happens, and then you have to work so hard to get hot again. The house might be able to maintain a temperature of 10 degrees or so above the exterior temperature, but not much more than that. So, I mean, if you're negative 54 degrees, you're still negative 40 inside.
Jesus Christ. If the power grid goes down, call the power company on your cell phone and report it. They might not know about your outage if the source of the outage affects relatively few houses. Another cause of lost home heat is a problem with your home's heating system. It may be worth the price to have the company that installed the system do a routine maintenance and cleaning to reduce the likelihood that the system will stop working in the winter. For sleeping, you should have a cold weather rated sleeping bag for every member of the family. Bags are rated based on the outdoor temperature range at which the bag will keep you warm, supposing that you are fully clothed in the bag and in a tent. So you have an advantage in using the bag indoors, but you still should wear warm clothes in the sleeping bag. The bag I keep at the ready is a Coleman, rated at 20 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Where I live, temperatures in winter usually hover just above or below freezing. I can always add a blanket or comforter on top of the sleeping bag, but if you live in the colder climate, consider a bag rated for lower temperatures.
I think that's okay. The Coleman bags are shit anyway. No offense. But all the offense. And I think a 20 to 40 degree bag is just kind of negligent. We were looking at that map, and pretty much most of the country was 0 degrees.
Yeah, or less.
Yeah.
Something rated at 20 degrees isn't going to do you. I mean, it might do you some good, but it ain't going to do you a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah. I mean, let's say it's 20 degrees. It's less than 0 degrees outside. You can get that 10 degree difference inside, so you're 10 degrees. It's still 10 degrees colder than what your bag is rated for. And that's the lower end of what it's rated for. It's a 20 to 40 degree bag, which means it's going to be struggling at 20 degrees. My blanket recommendation is a 0 degree bag.
Absolutely. You want a bag that's going to handle as cold as weather as possible.
Yeah. I mean, a 0 degree bag, and then you add your blankets and your stuff you have in your house. That should take you, unless like you live in a place that experiences negative 54 degrees, then you're going to want an extreme cold weather bag. But I would say a blanket recommendation for the lower 48, for the most part,
mm-hmm.
0 degrees.
Absolutely.
Minnesota, you know you need something more. That's what I have.
Up in Alaska, you'll need something better than that.
Yeah. Well, there's some more tricks. But yeah, I have my main sleeping bag is a military sleep system, which easily does 0 degrees. Actually, quite a little bit lower, but 0 degrees, pretty easy. And I've used that before a couple of nights, just the bag itself. You couple that with a few other things, you're pretty good. Let's get back to the thing. I just wanted to say that my Survival Punk's recommendation, get a 0 degree bag.
Your shirt is screwing with my eyes today.
It's a superhero shirt.
That's a superhero shirt?
No, look at it. It kind of looks like superhero scales or something.
Yeah, I know. It kind of looks like Spider-Man stuff, but it's all like black and white camouflage and looks like a bee's built a hive on it.
Yeah.
It's fucking with me.
A tent can be set up indoors during the day to help keep warm. Body heat and warmth to your breath builds up, making the tent warmer than the surrounding room.
I mean, that can be proven very easily. Have you ever sat in a cold in the cold and just watched the window steam up? That's your breath.
Yeah.
That is your breath doing that. It steams up the whole damn windshield.
Yeah, I mean, every kid knows you pull the blankets over your head and make a little tent and something. It gets hot in there and you can breathe it and you feel it. If you don't have a tent, just get your kids together, get your family together, make a fort.
Make a sheet fort.
Yeah, you just take some blankets, make a little fort. You're good. I use the smallest room you can to stay in to.
Yeah, the smaller the space, the easier it is going to be to maintain heat in there.
Obviously, a fireplace and a cord of dried wood would be an excellent resource. If your home has no fireplace, you might want to consider adding a freestanding wood-burning stove. The old Franklin stoves, with modern improvements, are still available for purchase. I'll look those up. Some models have a burner for cooking food, boiling water, etc. I've actually been thinking about trying to make a tiny wood-burning stove for just emergencies. Or I actually have a tiny wood camp stove that I thought about just like opening a window and just burning with it. I'm like, I bet I'll lose more heat than I gain from that tiny wood stove.
You know, the first home that me and our producer, producer Mike's wife, actually lived in had a wood-burning stove. It's pretty much our sole source of heat.
Yeah.
And damn, it kept the house toasty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luckily, my mom was there to do it because we did not.
Yeah, I didn't know how to build a fire at that point.
Yeah,
I still haven't built one, but I know the mechanics of it.
Yeah, I really want to put a wood burning stove in there. Blah 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 blah. Some models have a burner for cooking food, boiling water, etc. This is a prepping item. Is expensive? Yes, it is, and should be professionally installed. Meh. But we are not talking here about prepping for an apocalyptic event. The power can go out in the winter for a number of reasons, even for an extended period of time, without any long-term disaster as the cause.
This is why we have a separate propane heater. That, I mean, it's rated for outdoor use, but, I mean, our house, a lot of the rooms are very spacious enough. We put it in the biggest room, and that son of a bitch will heat this house, runs off a propane tank.
I know you had that.
Yeah.
We leave windows cracked because it's that way it doesn't get so bad in there.
Yeah, that way, you know, ventilation and whatnot. We only use it, I mean, we've had to use it like 2-3 times when the power is going out.
Yeah.
Because we're out here in the country and we're surrounded by maniac redneck assholes that don't know how to drive and love to hit power poles.
Right. Yeah, that's... I have a carbon dioxide detector, so I thought about just burning wood inside and just seeing... when the alarm went off, you're like, okay, time to crack a window. But let's go ahead and finish this off.
Okay. But what if you were stranded away from home in your car during a cold snap? Something as simple as keeping your gas tank filled can better your chances of survival. You can run the car to provide heat. You have to be concerned about the possibility of carbon monoxide gas in the vehicle's cabin. But in a recent model car that is well-maintained should not leak exhaust into the cab. Make certain that snow does not build up and block the exhaust pipe. Items to keep in a car survival kit, wool blanket, non-perishable food items, road flares, snap lights, a.k.a. glow sticks, a backup battery device for a cell phone.
All good stuff. I wrote a giant long article on disaster, basically winter prep for your car. Mm. And even that, like, it was like over 1,000 words. And even that, I realized I missed a couple things. I'm like, shoot.
So, yeah, good stuff here. And I agree with pretty much all of it.
Yeah, except for the whole thing about Coleman where you ripped him a new ass.
Well, yeah. I have 30-degree sleeping bags.
Right.
Two of them. Mm-hmm. Three of them. I have three of them.
I have and two I of have, them. Well, three of them. Well, four.
Yeah. Yeah, Doctor Who.
Doctor Who sucks.
Yeah, whatever. You know, in addition to my 0-degree military sleep system bag, if needed, I could use all of those bags. That'll get me, you know, you don't quite like add the numbers, you know, if you add 2 30-degree sleeping bags, you don't get, you know,
60
or negative 30.
Huh?
No, you don't get zero.
Oh.
Yeah, you don't get a 0-degree sleeping bag, but you get like, you know, maybe 10 or something.
Okay.
It doesn't quite double. You don't quite add the numbers up like that.
I was wondering about putting a sleeping bag in a sleeping bag and see what that would do.
You'll get a lot of warmth. I mean, the military sleep system is actually three bags. A Gore-Tex bivy bag, which I've actually never used, but it blocks the cold. So I thought putting it in my hammock to block the cold air from the bottom. And then it's a 30-degree bag and then a black bag that takes you all the way down.
Past now, is that based on air between the layers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it does that, and then you... yeah, so you could break the bag apart. Like, if it's like just like a, you know, fairly warm day, you can use the green patrol bag. That'll take you down to about 30. And then you could use the black bag by itself, or you could get in the green bag and then pull the black bag over you, and then you go down all the way. And then you use the Gore-Tex bag to, you could, as a tent sort of, you can zip yourself inside the Gore-Tex bag and sleep on the ground, and you won't get cold from the ground, because the ground will steal your heat. So that's why I thought I'd put it in my hammock, because it should work the same way. It should keep the convection from underneath the hammock from stealing my heat, but I use an underquilt. I'm getting all survivally-wively. Let's move on.
Oh, shut up. All right, next, our other second news story for this evening is the U.S. retail industry is collapsing.
I saw this and wanted to read it because I was in the retail industry for so long, and maybe again just because it's quick and easy. This comes from the Organic Prepper of Canada.ca. Shopping malls across America. It's funny she's writing about America. Shopping malls across America are going to look a whole lot emptier soon. An exodus of giant retailers is beginning with the announcement of hundreds of store closures and thousands of people newly unemployed. Yay. The 1st of January, I broke with my usual tradition and wrote not about positive resolutions, but about the impending rock slide of the U.S. economy. And rock slide is an apt word. As one thing starts rolling down the mountain, it will pick up other things until a veritable avalanche of other businesses and people are affected and rolling pell-mell right alongside. Last year, we saw an announcement of expected closures from retail giants. In February of 2013, Michael Snyder wrote on the Economic Collapse blog that we should see the following.
Best Buy.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Best Buy, forecast store closings, 200 to 250. Sears Holding Corporation, forecast store closings. Kmart, 175 to 225. Sears, 100 to 125. JCPenney, store closings, 300 to 350. Office Depot, 125 to 150. Barnes & Noble, 190 to 240 per company comments. GameStop.
Oh,
500 to 600. Office Max, 150 to 175. Radio Shack, 450 to 550. Jesus Christ. Unfortunately, it didn't stop there. This morning, a World News Daily report announced Macy's is closing 14 of its 790 stores across the country. JCPenney is closing 35 of its stores and laying off 2,250 workers. Sears has been around for 122 years, but it too is closing 235 underperforming stores. C. Wonder, the Preby retailer, is going out of business, closing all 11 of its U.S. stores in the next few weeks.
Wow, I've never heard of them, but whatever.
Wet Seal is closing 338 retail stores while dealing with bankruptcy proceedings. Nearly 3,700 full and part-time workers will be unemployed. Aeropostale, Todd's favorite clother.
Oh, God.
Suffering from declining sales, closed 75 stores during the holiday season, which runs from November through January, and in 2015, they expect to close an additional 50 to 75 stores. Radio Shack, which is negotiating with lenders to gain approval to shutter 1,100 stores, said last month that it closed 175 locations in 2014.
Yeah, I had read that this year's holiday Black Friday sales were way down.
Possibly the lowest in a long, long time.
Yeah, which is kind of counterintuitive when everyone thinks that the economy is doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
why do people think the economy is doing well?
The stock market is right up around an all-time high.
Yes, why? Because everything's online now.
Pretty much. Well!
Why do you need stores when you got websites?
I actually think that the online sales this year were up. I did all of my Christmas shopping online from Amazon. Mm. Click, 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 done.
See? And that's what everybody's doing, which is why physical stores that you actually walk into are going the way of the fucking dodo bird. Because America's populated by fat, lazy bastards, and the less they can do by actually going out in the world, the more they're going to do by sitting on their ass on their fucking beds or on their fucking couches, getting on their goddamn laptops and tablets, which they bought online in the first fucking place, to buy more shit on fucking line.
You want to hear something that you may actually love and do from now on?
Yeah, what up?
you can go on Amazon.com. And if you have a Prime account, which I do, you can get a lot of stuff ordered, free shipping, like next day shipping, free next day shipping.
Okay.
You can set up on a lot of things automatic payment. So every cycle, 2 weeks, once a month, whatever, it'll automatically buy that product and ship it to you like next day. You can order cheaper than Walmart or within a dollar or two from Walmart with free shipping, 50-pound bags of dog food that the mailman has to drag up to your doorstop for you. You no longer have to go to the store, get dog food, carry it from your car, through your muddy-ass driveway, up your stairs, and into your house.
I kind of want to do that now.
Yeah, you don't even have to go buy it. You set it up, and you just stay here. And the mailman comes and knocks on your door. Here's your dog food.
It'd be worth it just to watch the mailman carry the dog food.
The woman.
She can get a workout.
That's even better. Hell, we're lucky she made it out of her damn kitchen.
Oh, my God. How does this affect you? You may not work in retail yourself. Ha ha ha! But never doubt that the mass closure of these businesses will directly affect you. Yes. Maybe you are wondering how.
How?
You aren't much of a shopper. You aren't a retail worker. Perhaps you believe that you can compartmentalize this information, pack it away, and go on with your life as you always have. The thing is, it's not just the patrons and employees of these stores who are affected. This is going to be catastrophic on a variety of levels. Let's go a little bit deeper. Think about the people who worked in these stores. Now they're without jobs. There will be more competition for the smaller number of jobs in America, and many people will not be able to find work. They'll survive by going on assistance, drain the U.S. coffers of even more, as former employed people search for work that just isn't there. We'll see an increase in foreclosures, repossessions, and welfare.
Think about those who provided the inventory for those stores. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know a lot of it was made in other countries, but it was imported here and distributed here. More businesses work on the net 30 basis, meaning that the inventory is delivered and the payment for that inventory is due in 30 days. And guess what? God dang it, they even made me say it. The companies that imported the merchandise aren't going to get paid. This will ripple through and cause other businesses to go other, which means still more people are unemployed. Think about those Think about those who transport the inventory. Trucking companies and independent operators who drive the trucks won't get money owed to them either. As companies struggle to keep the trucks on the road, transport costs will go up, which will cause future inventory in stores to be priced higher.
I want to pause you for a second there to say, hallelujah, we have seen the cheapest gas prices in a long time, which actually spells some bad things for the economy, which is this whole declining economy here. But yay for us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing gas prices beginning with a 1 for the first time in years.
Yes.
I mean, I'm seeing it in the 180s now.
Yes.
I never thought I'd see that again.
I never did. If we see gas price under a dollar, I think the end is near.
If we see gas prices under a dollar, everybody's going to expect the bubble to burst and to start skyrocketing back up, which yeah. means that people are going to go out there with gas tank after gas can after gas can.
Cardboard box.
Yeah, cardboard box, Beavis and Butthead style, and get as much gas as possible. Guess what? There's going to be a run on gas, which means there'll be less gas available, which means gas prices will go back up again.
This doesn't really affect you, but the great ammo crisis of, like, 2012-2013 was abominable. I still don't think you can find 22 long rifle ammunition readily. Like, if you go into the store, I think they still laugh at you. This is how we'll be affected. We're having a hard time staying on trouble. I was like, we'll be able to knock out 2 episodes a night. No, we'll be struggling to finish 1 episode. The price of everything is going to go up because wary distributors are going to try to recoup what they've lost from these companies that went under, while transporters increase prices to try to cover the losses. Jobs will be even harder to get than they previously were. And looking at the unemployment rates, it was pretty damn darned. This is pretty difficult before. Pretty darned.
Pretty damn darn difficult.
When people have no jobs, they spend no money, crushing the manufacturers and retailing's economy even more. As financial desperation increases, so will crime. And it won't just be property crime.
expect an uptick in violence as property owners fight back.
Yep.
If you don't live an entirely self-sufficient bubble, who doesn't? Come on now. You can bet you'll be affected in one way or the other.
What can you do about the collapsing economy? It's more vital than ever to be aware of what's going on and to start getting prepared for it on all levels. You need to consider the following. Create multiple streams of income. We'd all like to feel like we're reliably employed, but that's just not true. You need only to look at the numbers above to see that jobs can be ephemeral. You need to be making money from more than one source, multiple streams of income.
Like me.
Start a small business that provides a safety net. Check out this great article on Grey Wolf Survival for more information on how to do it. Learn to shop wisely. A couple of years ago, I wrote this article about how shopping wisely can save you a fortune on your regular purchases. Each purchase needs to be thought of carefully.
Excuse you.
Excuse you too. Because the day may come when your own personal economic collapse occurs in the form of job loss, an illness, or a catastrophic bill. Build a pantry. A well-stocked larder can be your lifetime in the event of a personal finances take a hit. Your supply of food, toiletries, and household items can mean the difference between weathering a storm in a relative comfort or going under completely.
I totally agree with that, because I've been mostly living off food preps for a month now.
You're out of MREs, aren't you?
Well, yes. I spent a week eating all the MREs. I still have some leftovers just because I got so sick and tired of eating MREs.
Did you eat the toilet paper yet?
I've been burning that mostly. I have a lot of good food storage. My deep freezer is packed to the brim. It was good. So yeah, food storage. I should have had enough food storage to last like 3 months. So that's good. I'm not too worried about that. I'm buying a few staple necessities I need here and there. I switched to drinking at home, pretty much cups of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a box of 100 tea bags.
Yeah.
And I drink about 2 or 3 a day.
That'll last you a bit.
It'll last me a bit, yeah. Learn to do it yourself. Really the epitome of preparedness and self-sufficiency. Only way to reduce your dependency on the economy. You can truly be unaffected. Learn to live on less and enjoy it. We're just going to skip through that.
If you can't protect it, you don't own it.
And have you seen evidence of the blah, 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 blah?
Well, if you want to read this article more in depth, go to theorganicprepper.ca.
And links will be in the show notes, as always.
All right, now it's time for our main topic this episode, small space prepping. And I get the distinct feeling that you're wanting to talk about this because you now live in a small space.
I now live in a home 204 square feet. And I'm a prepper. As I've said, I've been living off my food preps, which should very well be 3 months of food prep.
It's a damn good thing you had those.
Yes, it is. I haven't even broke into the rice and whatnot yet. I've been still basically maintaining a paleo diet, you know, canned veggies.
You occasionally walk past the rice and go...
Yeah. I have 50 pounds of rice, so if all else fails, I'll be living off rice. I'll make it.
That dude from miniseries Alone in the Wild, he was living off like rice and oatmeal and shit. And he was crying at the camera.
I don't have any oatmeal, yeah.
You'll be crying at the camera.
I'll have new food before that, way before that.
I'll come over, I'll be like, what are you doing? I'm crying at the camera. That's an old soup can.
Yeah. I've been making my own soup, too. I'm starving.
There's still soup in that can.
Yeah. So a couple of the ways that I've learned to deal with the small spaces is... when I did have my entire case of MREs, I had a covering over it, like a tablecloth covering, which went all the way to the ground, and I just made an end table out of it.
Makes sense.
Makes sense, yeah. I just had a, I need an end table, and I had that box of MREs, which is about perfect size for a couch end table.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
That's what I used in my apartment for all those years. The end table between like the lamp and the couch.
Yeah.
That was a case of MREs.
I never knew that.
Yep, case of MREs with a Spider-Man blanket over it.
Son of a bitch, I never knew there was a damn case of MREs.
Yeah, right now, actually, since the MREs is gone, I've got the Spider-Man blanket over my backup battery bank. So oh my God. It's there.
Your end table has changed shape.
Yes. The
the loft, and then you'll have this in your attic or whatnot. But if you have a tiny house, where my loft is, where the floor of the loft meets the sides of the walls and the roof, you know, there's basically a little triangle spot up there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot, but I found that spot in my house is the exact size for a can and a mason jar.
Really?
So I can line rows of mason jars, you know, 8-foot runs
mm-hmm.
of mason jars. So that's a lot of mason jars.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then in front of that, you know, I could put the next size up a mason jar, the quart cans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the quart, I think. yeah, so the pints fit against the back wall, the quarts fit in front of that. Same thing with canned food. You know, it's taking those weird spaces, the triangles, the nooks, the crannies, putting stuff there, you know, and using all of that space.
Space that would go otherwise unused.
Yeah. Yeah, finding all those interesting spaces and finding stuff to fill them. And like I said earlier, with my pots and pans, I'm going to run a 2x4 up in the air using my vertical space
mm-hmm.
and hang it from there.
Yeah, a lot of people forget, I mean, the benefits of...
living in a 3D universe?
Yes.
Yeah.
They really do. I mean, there is... I mean, like, look at the ceiling. The only thing that's attached to the ceiling is a light fixture.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, you could fucking put hooks and stuff in the studs and be storing shit up there.
Yeah. You know, I have those joists above my living room that's the bottom of my loft, which I always plan to, like, use that to hang stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
I use the front wall of the loft. So a couple years ago, I took a blacksmithing class and I made a coat hook.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's actually, I'll show it to you next time you're over at my place. You guys actually need to come see it. It's 80% done now or so, something like that. So I put the hole in it and then I mounted the coat hook on the loft beam. So next to my bookshelf. So now I can hang my coat there, hang my hat. Actually, it's such a big hook. I could hang several coats off of it.
Hmm.
I need to actually forge another coat hook or so. So I can run stuff all across that using that space that, I mean, it removes some of your openness, but you know, you have that room there. The bottom side of that, I could put storage stuff all in there, which I have done.
Right.
I'm putting a storage loft above the kitchen. So I put stuff there, you know, so, another trick that I've not done because I have so much storage space really that I just don't need to, but is to books on your bookshelf. And I have 2.5 bookshelves. Thanks to Mike's reckless driving. He snapped my bookshelves in half.
Oh, that was your damn lump's fault.
Yeah, the hump in the driveway.
That fucking hump. I'm pretty sure those bookcases were perfectly fine until that hump happened.
Yeah, the bookshelf was a Walmart bookshelf, not the greatest thing. We're only 37 minutes in? I could swear we're longer. Anyway.
That's what she said.
So yeah, you can pull your books forward, because especially paperbacks and stuff, they only take up like, what, half a bookshelf?
Yeah, pull them forward, edge them
put
out.
Put stuff behind it.
Exactly, like they do in a library. I mean, they face everything, and to put it in stock boy terminology. Yeah. Face it and then store stuff behind it. That's a bunch of extra space that you're just not using anyway.
Yep.
And plus it gives the added benefit of making your bookshelf look all nice and tidy and exactly. All the titles readable.
Yep. I mean, hell, you could hide... What I might do, actually, is hide ammunition behind my books like that instead of guns. Because I put all of my ammunition in that... in my shooting range duffel bag.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very heavy, by the way.
Yeah, and something I'd like to add, I mean, never underestimate the benefit of under things.
Yes. Underneath your bed. I used, when I had a bed, before I used a hammock, I took 2x4 blocks and used that to raise up my bed 2 inches, which was the exact height I needed to slide cases of water underneath it.
Yeah.
So I could have, like, 15, 20 cases of water underneath my bed, you'd never know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Tons of water storage. Water storage. Yeah, I need more of that. A couple places in my house, I've got unfinished walls. So they're, you can see the studs because they're sort of hidden. Like there's a closet that I have with unfinished studs. I didn't want to waste plywood on.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a gap in between there where you could store stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you could turn cans sideways and stack them up. You just keep it from rolling out. Just stack them, you know, stack a lot of stuff in there. Originally, I thought about storing my guns in my closet in those joists back there so they'd be hidden behind the clothes and stuff. And that would free up a little corner, which if I ever get a wood-burning stove, I might get rid of the gun case and hide the guns in another place just to have that free corner to put in a wood-burning stove.
Right.
We'll decide. I mean, I rearrange stuff. I might be able to fit one in there. So there's that. Like I said, underneath stuff, couches, hide water underneath your couch, hide food underneath your couch, weapons, guns, ammunition, whatever.
And keep in mind, especially with couches, I mean, a lot of couches won't face, I mean, the back of it won't be flat up against the wall anyway.
Oh, yeah.
The top of it might touch the wall, but you're going to have a gap there that you can put stuff right there, too.
Yeah, yeah, there'll be all that stuff. And you pull it out just a little bit from the wall, you have a ton of storage space behind it.
I mean, I recommend that everybody, all of our listeners, go out there, just go around your house, look under stuff, look behind stuff. Just take an inventory of how much non-used space that you have. I mean, and think about it, under couches and behind couches, nobody's going to see that anyway.
Yeah, I think we've just about wrapped up the small spaces preps.
Don't forget the backs of doors.
Exactly. I only have one back of the door. But yeah, the back of the door, you can hang storage off of it. All of your vertical space is what I really think that's an unutilized space. You can hang stuff. You can make stuff go all the way up to the ceiling. Tall storage. That's vertical space is your friend. You've got all that space. It's completely wasted usually. So yeah, let's move on. What do we got next?
Next, we've got Gadget Punk. And it's going to be our preview review about the book After the Crumble by Devon Porter.
Devon,
whoever.
So, yeah, the good folks over at Prepper Press sent this book out to me. Even though I sent them the wrong address, apparently I put the wrong zip code on my address. The post office is not as dumb as I thought they were. Corrected it and got it to me today. So I can get mail at my new place.
That's awesome.
So read the back of the book and tell us what it's about. It's a boot.
Our future has crumbled. In the late 2020s, the grid finally flickered out for the last time, succumbing to attacks from a newly formed resistance, fuel scarcity, and general entropy. It is now the year 2037, and many have died, with the few that managed to escape death solely concerned with their daily survival. Gavin Collier is one of the only lucky few, but survival alone isn't enough for him anymore. Recognizing that the meaning of life didn't crumble along with the rest of the world, he embarks on a dangerous, personal journey for reasons that few can understand. After leaving his home for the first time in years, Gavin must commit murder in order to save his life, only surviving through good luck and sheer force of will. The series of events that follow will alter Gavin's life forever. He finds true love for the first time, and when his love makes the journey to join Gavin at his family farm, the violence and evil of the outside world follows her there. Renewed by hope and power of love, Gavin will do whatever it takes to protect his future wife and the remaining members of his beloved family as the dangerous forces close in on his cherished farm and small community. Gavin's family has been surviving with little help from the outside world, but now they must come together with their neighbors to fight for their land and those they love. Personalities clash, lives are lost, and fear is inescapable. They all must struggle to keep their humanity in this new, brutal world. Gavin knows that they must prevail at all costs and keep the flames of freedom and the faith burning during one of humanity's darkest times. Doing so is the only way to make life worth living, and worth something more than just survival.
And Prepper Press, if you need any new people to help narrate your books, to make them audiobooks, Mike here would love to do it.
Absolutely. My voice is up for hire.
Yes. So it sounds like a very good book. The author, Devon, contacted me months ago before the release about possibly reading it or reviewing it. And I love books to read and review. And this one will not be like the other book that I have in my car that I've not reviewed going on 2 years.
And looks like this is the first part of an ongoing series.
Doesn't it say that somewhere? Not yes. On like the front or something, like the new series.
Somewhere? I don't see that.
New original. Oh, never mind. Voice. So after the crumble, check it out from Prepper Press. You can get it from them. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon, and I'm sure I'll have a link to it in Amazon, where if you buy it, I make 3.5 cents.
And it, coming in at just under 300 pages, it makes for a... Looks like a relatively quick read. Not enough to bore you to death. It's certainly no War and Peace.
Yeah.
And it's interestingly enough, it looks like it has a frequently asked question section in the back where they ask, where people ask questions like, "What is the crumble?" The crumble is the slow collapse of industrial civilization.
Huh. No, good stuff in there. Have you ever read War and Peace, by the way?
I just know it's a Russian novel embracing over 100 characters set during the Napoleonic War.
Yeah, I actually was feeling some remorse. I'm like, I think I need to read the classics, like War and Peace, and you know, some of the other classics. The closest thing I ever read to a classic was trying to read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh my God! What about Sense and Sensibility? What about Tale of Two Cities?
No.
What about
I saw A Tale of Two Cities on the Wishbone PBS show, where the dog recreated old novels.
I embarrassed myself in school one time.
Yeah.
The teacher asked if anybody had read David Copperfield. I'm like, no, I saw him in person one time.
Oh, my God.
He made a motorcycle disappear on
stage. Penn & Teller have a new TV show where it's like full Penn & Teller. Like, you do your magic trick in front of them. If you fool them, like, you win a chance to go... You get to go perform your trick in Vegas.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. but anyway, there's that.
And now it is time for an ad from the good people over at WellFoodCo.com.
WellFoodCo, home of the Paleo MRE, which I wish I had instead of a case of regular MREs. The Carne Bar, created by Rob Wolf and John Wellborn.
I've been meaning to ask, what's actually in a Paleo MRE?
I brought it over here and we tested it together.
We did?
Yes. Your wife devoured it, mostly.
Oh, damn all that acid I did in the 60s.
Yes, it does... It was pineapple, dehydrated pineapple, and coconut flakes, and some almonds.
Oh!
Kind of a trail mixy thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that crap.
Yeah. Crap, it was good stuff.
I mean, it was good crap.
Yeah, I mean, your wife devoured it like a hungry Ethiopian kid.
I got this texture thing going on with coconut flakes.
Yeah.
They don't sit right with me. I'm sorry. I mean, it feels like pencil shavings.
I can't wait for the apocalypse so you'll eat whatever. You're like, I'm done with this texture thing. I'm like, you get back to your pre-marriage weight of, like, stick figure, and you're like, that's it. I gotta eat.
No, fuck that. I'm using that to, you know, go full throttle into anorexia.
Yeah, sure. Well Food Co. Great food. All organic. All good, high-quality food. Grass-fed whey protein, grass-fed beef jerky, good stuff. Check them out. Click the ad on the Survival Punk banner on the left-hand side.
Right-hand side.
Right-hand side?
Yeah, it's your damn website. Good God, man!
Yeah, actually, there's nothing on the left-hand side. I don't like things on the left-hand side. There's just margin there.
And you're left-handed, you traitorous bastard.
Well, the left hand is where all the good content is.
Oh, that's where all the good content is?
Yes.
You traitorous bastard.
Yeah.
All right, and that moves us right on into our Nutrition Punk segment, speaking of, like, paleo stuff.
Yes.
And 9 more calorie myths.
That we will not read super in-depth, but we will glass over it. You can read the whole article at marksdailyapple.com. The
article was a mile long.
I know.
Okay.
The calorie count of a food is the sole determinant of its metabolic fate. That's super wrong. The way many people envision it, the only thing food does is provide energy for storage or immediate use. But food is more than energy. Protein, for example, is broken down to amino acids, which provide the building blocks for human cells, muscles, and tissues. And yes, in extreme cases, protein can provide energy either through direct metabolism of the amino acids or conversion into glucose through gluconeogenesis, by the way. But the vast majority of protein we eat is directed towards structural roles. We build things with protein, and we even do burn protein for energy, but it's not very efficient.
calorie counting is the best way to lose weight. Since we all agree that weight loss requires that a person expend more energy than they take in, counting them should be the only way to lose weight. Nearly everyone can count and do basic math, so why not just do a little addition and subtraction? Once the stark reality of the numbers lies in front of you, and the true physics-based path to healthy weight loss reveals itself, you'd have to acquiesce and give in to stop eating so much. You glutton. I thought that said gluten for a minute.
No.
You glutton? Are you dyslexic? Yeah, shut up. You fucking jinxed me, you prick! Because science implores you to, and no one can deny science. The latest low-fat, low-carb diet study contradicts this. Participants in the low-carb arm were told not to restrict calories by the researchers, yet calories were restricted and weight was lost. Detractors often point to this as proof that calories indeed matter. To me, this showcases the active consideration of calories as unnecessary. They lost weight and reduced calories without counting calories. That's good stuff, right? Heck, even when you compare a strict calorie-counting diet with an ad libitum... Did I say that right?
Yep.
At Liberty, low-fat, high-carb diet, the calorie counters lose out, and the ad libitum dieters have better weight loss retention after 2 years. Calorie counting just doesn't work for most people.
Yep. At the end of the day, if you consume more calories than you expend, you will gain fat. I've seen this beat into hell where people consume like upwards of 6,000 to 10,000 calories and lose weight. Gotta love that phrase. At the end of the day, people drop this in comment sections, and that's that. The debate is over. The argument won. Go home. Except, is that really the case? Weight is so nonspecific. You might gain bone.
Really?
You might gain muscle. You might gain glycogen. You might gain organ weight. Wow.
That's what I always wanted, might, a big floppy pancreas.
I know. You might gain newly repaired intestinal lining. And yeah, you might gain fat. But that's not a foregone conclusion just because you've gained weight.
I mean, if you go by that, technically every bodybuilder in the world is obese.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Severely obese. If there was something beyond obese, they would be that.
Yeah. Conscious regulation of one's energy intake and expenditure is possible.
Holy shit.
Imagine if you had to maintain conscious control over every physiological process in your body. When you walked, you'd say to yourself, step left, step right, step left, step right, all day long, or you wouldn't get anywhere.
Blink, 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 blink.
To provide oxygen to your body, you'd have to remember to breathe in and breathe out every few seconds. An hour or so before bedtime, you'd will your pineal, pineal gland to begin...
I think it's pineal.
It is pineal.
Okay.
I've seen Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's pineal. You'd will your pineal gland to begin secreting melatonin so you could sleep. After eating, you'd have to alternately engage and relax your peristalsis muscles to create the undulation that forces food along the digestive tract.
That would suck.
Performing a squat would require conscious orchestration and contraction of dozens of agonist, antagonist, stabilizers, and synergist muscles at once. Life would get pretty unwieldy, wouldn't it? So where do we get the idea that eating, one of the most basic and essential physiological processes, require constant vigilance and number crunching? What did people have to do before the concept of calorie was invented?
In metabolic ward studies where calories are counted for you and food is strictly weighed, measured, and provided by researchers, calorie counting works pretty well. Subjective feelings of appetite and immaterial when you have only access to the food you're provided and you can't leave and get more. what's the...
Something about a McDouble in there.
And that normally people... you don't have to think about food. Everyone responds to calories equally. Bullshit. For the most part, people all have the same basic physiological machinery. We all metabolize carbs, fat, and protein and other nutrients along the same pathways. We all use insulin to sequester glucose into cells. For example, even people who don't produce insulin will respond to injected insulin. That said, we all have different capacities for using these pathways. For instance, most overweight or obese people seem to do best on a lower carb, higher fat diet.
That's how I lost all the weight.
Yep. The literature is pretty clear on that.
If you are insulin resistant and overweight, which is most of the overweight population,
you're going to make me cry.
Going low carb, I'm going to get Jimmy Moore back on the show. Going low carb is the best, easiest way to control hunger, spontaneously reduce food intake, and lose weight, and, most importantly, body fat. Hundreds of success stories from this site and others further testament to that. However,
was working before me before I gave up.
Yep, gave up. The relatively rare insulin-sensitive obese phenotype does better on calorie-counting low-fat diets. If you're obese and insulin-sensitive, you'll probably be able to lose more weight eating more carbs. That's just a fact. And just more proof that the macronutrient ratios, personal history, hormonal status, and genetic background are relevant to the impact of calories.
In essence, basically everybody's biology is a bit different. Everybody's chemically different. I mean, what works for some person will backfire drastically on another.
Yeah, it's why blanket statements only get you so far. My blanket statement is, if you're overweight, if you eat a low-carb, high-fat diet, you will lose weight.
And I did.
Yes. If you do a low-carb, high-fat diet and don't lose weight, then we got to tweak it. But I would say the majority, it tends to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the easiest way to sort of get you there.
The results from studies apply to every individual human. Lost in all the blog chatter about this or that study is the fact that the faceless participants whose bodies we're discussing are individuals. Excuse me. The individual experiences of these individual subjects dissolve into that meaning. The average presented in the abstract, if you're lucky, you'll get a plus slash minus indicating the range of responses, but every subject from every study ever conducted has had a unique reaction to the experiment. For instance, there's the single low-calorie subject from the study who experienced no reduction in liver fat. Everyone but him saw improvements. Should that guy disregard his own experiences because the study's conclusions about the effect of the dieting of the or liver fat in the average person said otherwise? You are not a statistic. This goes for every study out there, but it's especially pertinent for diet studies. I know many people who've had paradoxical responses to various dietary interventions, responses that the studies don't really capture. Are they all lying?
The concept of a calorie isn't applicable to the complexity of a human metabolism. Metabolism! Sometimes I like to dream that we're bomb calometers.
Calorometers.
Bomb calometers.
Calorometers.
Our stomachs are buckets full of water. That's where the human body of 75% water claims originate. Suspended inside those stomach buckets is a smaller sack called a bomb. Did not know that. Smaller sack called a bomb. A tube runs from our mouths and feeds directly into the bomb. Weird. When we eat something, the food goes down the tube and into the bomb. As we chew, a series of tendons attached to our jaws rub together to produce a spark.
Oh my god, I'm scared.
Heat travels down into the bomb to ignite the food.
Oh god.
A separate tube runs from our lungs to the bomb carrying pure filtered oxygen. As food combusts and heat generated is distributed through the body to give us energy, the beauty of digesting our food in the bomb is that it is a closed system, shut off and free of the influence from outside the universe. So we know that what we put into the bomb is exactly what we'll be getting out of digesting it. Meat, potatoes, kale, Pepsi, it's all pure, undulated, raw fuel, and it all burns equally. It's all heat energy. Unfortunately, that's not how the human body works.
So basically, if you're in a really tight spot and the people are coming in and you've only got one last move and only enough energy to defend yourself or your family one last time, eat as much as you can really quick and then rip out your stomach and throw it at them.
Boom. Yes.
Boom. The scientists all agree that a calorie is a calorie. I contend that no one truly believes a calorie is a calorie. Even the researchers who claim perfect parity between different caloric sources in esteemed scientific journals contradict themselves in their own papers. We conclude that a calorie is a calorie from a purely thermodynamic point of view. This is clear because the human body, or indeed any living organism, cannot create or destroy energy, but can only convert energy from one form to another. No argument here.
in comparing energy balance between dietary treatments. However, it must be remembered that the units of dietary energy are metabolizable energy and not gross energy. This is perhaps unfortunate because metabolizable energy is much more difficult to determine than is gross energy, because the Atwater factors used in calculating metabolizable energy are not exact. As such, our food tables are not perfect, and small errors are associated with their use. Small errors? Mistakes were made. Nothing to see here. Move along. Don't worry yourself about the margins. It all evens out in the end. In addition, we conclude that the substitution of one macronutrient for another has best shown in some studies to have statistical significant effect on the expenditure of half the human energy balance equation. This has been observed most often in high-protein diets. Evidence indicates, however, that the difference in energy expenditure is a small and can potentially account for less than one-third of the differences in weight loss and have been reported between high-protein or low-carbohydrate diets and high-carbohydrate or low-fat diets. It's just one-third of the difference in weight loss. That's nothing at all. As such, a calorie is a calorie. Even though we just explained how a calorie is not a calorie, a calorie is a calorie.
Further research is needed to identify the mechanisms that result in greater weight loss with one diet than with another.
In other words, our simplistic calorie-in, calorie-out approach is inadequate, and other mysterious mechanisms are responsible for the differences in weight loss between diets. But trust us, a calorie is still a calorie. We're all on the same page here. Some of us just can't admit it.
All right, another good one from Mark Sisson at the Mark's Daily Apple.
And that's another addition for any voice work you have out there.
Yeah, my big one definitely is a calorie is a calorie. A calorie is not a calorie. It's just not.
I always thought a calorie was an Italian car.
No. Yeah, I mean, just the studies that I read about where the scientists put people on a 1,000 calorie diet, 1,000 calories of 90% fat, 1,000 calories of 90% protein, 1,000 calories of 90% carbohydrate.
I'm pretty sure I've consumed 1,000 calories since I've been recording this podcast.
Probably. And your Cokes that you're drinking?
I've drunk two Pepsis. Let me see. 150 calories. Okay, I've only consumed 300 calories.
Yeah. So 300 calories from two drinks.
Yep. At least one serving size is actually a can on this. I've seen it where it's like serving sizes per can, 2.5.
Yeah. Ooh, there's a trick. So
that is a trick.
No. Diet drinks are even trickier because they actually have calories, but anything under one calorie per serving doesn't count as a calorie. So diet drinks sometimes have like 0.5 of a calorie per serving, and they make the serving small. So, like, say, 2 liter of Diet Mountain Dew says it has 0 calories per serving, but the entire bottle might actually have, like, 20 calories or something, or whatever. So it's super trickery on their part.
Tricksters, I say.
Yes. What's next?
Now it is time for our Permaculture Minute, brought to you by the Permaculture Playing Cards by our good friend Josh Whedon.
Back above an hour.
Paul.
Good times.
Okay, and this week we're going to be. We've already done that. I'm starting on the wrong side of the damn deck again. Okay, this week's card is the Nine of Hearts. Fungi. Have I already done that?
I don't think so.
Okay, then the Eight of Hearts. Mulberry.
What's behind Mulberry?
Electric Tractor.
Do the Electric Tractor. I know we haven't done that one.
Okay, fine. Electric Tractor. Six of Hearts, Electric Tractor. Electric Tractors don't have the range issues that electric cars have since they never go far from the power source. Lead acid batteries are completely recyclable, and their weight gives the tractor a low center of gravity and greater traction. Some electric tractors can be used as backup power sources. Attaching a solar canopy could recharge the batteries. Electric tractors generally provide more horsepower in smaller packages while being quieter with no exhaust. And that has been our Permaculture Minute. And now it is time for our Wild Edible of the Week. The Wild Edible of the Week, as for the last few weeks, is brought to you by the book, The Complete Guide to Edible Wild Plants, Mushrooms, Fruits, and How the Hell Do You Get These Cards Back in the Damn Box?
The box is completely falling apart.
Yeah, I know. God, you son of a bitch. Traitorous box. We're recording something here, you... Never mind. Okay, How to Find, Identify, and Cook Them by Katie Letcher Lyle. And this week's Wild Edible of the Week is Wild Rice. Zizania aquatica is a cereal grain named by Great Lake Native Americans that grows in water. It is misnamed, being no kin to rice. What the hell? Okay, we're getting a different Wild Edible of the Week. Good God, they're already trying to throw me off here. Ooh, this thing's got colored pictures on it. I didn't even know that. Let me see. Plums. Prunus is the name of the genus that includes plums. The word prunus in Latin means plum tree. Plums are deciduous trees. The leaves are serrated and alternate, oval to rounded, and smooth with five-petaled flowers that bloom white or pink in spring. Many wild varieties of plums grow in the temperate parts of the country, with fruits green, gold, golden, purple, blue, or red, sometimes sweet, sometimes sour, sometimes clingstone, sometimes freestone, ripening in the fall. All are smooth-skinned. And that has been our Wild Edible of the Week.
Wild Edible.
Okay, and then now it is time for your favorite wild edible, coffee. Specifically, the Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Mai Tai Coffee. I actually have some green coffee beans at home that I need to...
Green coffee beans?
Green coffee beans, yes.
Don't those need to be digested first?
They need to be roasted.
Oh.
They need to be roasted and then ground. And I don't have a grinder.
Your computer scares
me. But I do have a mortar and pestle. So... I may roast the coffee beans in a skillet and then smash them with a mortar and pestle, or maybe even use my food processor.
If you need to, I've got a coffee grinder if you need to borrow it. You probably want to clean the pabil spice out of it first.
Yeah, that's spicy coffee. I need a coffee grinder, but I'm sure if I could go super old school and like roast it over an open fire and then mortar and pestle it.
Where did you get those green beans?
Mai Tai Coffee. The place where I get all of my good coffee from. It helps
the local indigenous people of Thailand.
It does. They donate a portion of the proceeds to help a charity over there that supports orphans. Super good. And they pay the workers a fair trade wage so they can support their families. So they're helping a lot of work in Thailand, which I'm a super fan of. I have a history of Thailand, a history with Thailand. I like them a lot. So if you need coffee, you need good quality coffee... Mai Tai Coffee is the place to go.
No, the place to go is survivalpunk.com. And click on the banner on the right-hand side that says Mai Tai Coffee.
And if you order, tell Matt I said hi.
All right. And that brings us to Couch Potato Mike's Celebrity Invite of this week. And I'm actually going to invite Devon Porter onto the show.
That's good. I'm working out an interview request with him.
The author of After the Crumble, the book that I read the back of earlier that we did a slight review on, that looks like it's actually going to be a good read. I just saw the word Gavin in there. That's awesome. It's in chapter 9.
Nice.
Yeah. Be the first person to email me the exact page number in chapter 9 where you see the word Gavin and you win nothing.
Yeah.
But, Devon Porter, you have an open and an open door invite onto the Survival Punk podcast. Or you can even come on my podcast, soon to be recording my second episode. I know I've been promising that for months now, but whatever. You just never stick around long enough to record it, so.
Right. Well, I'll be out here this weekend. I'll tell you after the podcast.
Alrighty, and if you want to advertise on this wonderful font of information about survival, the punk life, and
we've got a spot that opened up for you.
Yes, we do. If you notice, we didn't give the normal amount of advertising spots, so that means we've got one open. So if you would like to advertise your survival goods, your punk goods, your fitness goods, right here at the place that is growing like a damn weed that you can eat, that is paleo,
yeah.
Please contact James at survivalpunk.com, and he will work out a good deal for you. Cash, precious metals... Meat, he needs them all right now.
Yes.
He might even sell you an advertising spot for a place to shower regularly.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, so that's James at survivalpunk.com. And while you're over there at survivalpunk.com, find one of the thousands of little spots where you can click and join up with the army that will one day be leading the world into the new world, the Survival Punk Army.
Yes. Exclusive discounts to several vendors, free ebooks, exclusive content, downloads of all of our podcasts in easy download zip files, all of that and more at the Survival Punk Army join up, quick and easy. I got one guy. So there's several different options to join. And if you email me, we can work out even more. I had one guy, Western Union money to me. Whatever. Go Scott in Canada. One guy. So one of the options to join is $5 a month. Nobody notices $5 a month.
$5 a month?
Yeah. I mean, technically, it adds up to being more expensive than buying a one-year membership at $50. So 1 year is $50.
And most of our listeners will spend more than that in a day just on weed and hookers.
Yeah. So, yeah, this one guy, he joined up. It's $5 a month. So every month, I get my $5. So if a bunch of you get $5 a month, that's good for me. And you don't even notice it. Like, $5?
And your money is going to help a great cause.
Yeah. Me ruling the world.
Exactly.
And on that bombshell.
Leading the way. You know you want to join up. And you know why? Because the Survival Punk Army wants you!
I need to get you watching Top Gear on Netflix.
I don't want to.
Of course you don't. I'll get your wife to start watching it.
Top Gear sucks.
Yeah, whatever.
Other than that, I think this has been a really, really great show.
It has.
We went a little bit of a timey-wimey right there in the US, you know, the retail industry collapsing thing.
But yeah.
Other than that, I think it's been a really awesome episode. I've had a lot of fun doing it. It has amused me.
It has amused you.
Except for your shirt, which is still fucking with my eyes.
Right.
And for the potty break you took right in the middle of the damn show. You probably paused because you didn't want anybody else in the world, our listeners, to know that you stunk up my house. But whatever.
Yeah.
It's my pod cave.
Yep. All right, let's wrap this B up.
All right. So, for the Survival Punk podcast at survivalpunk.com, this is Couch Potato Mike.
And this is James.
And remember, when you're podcasting with your best friend, bring nose plugs.
DIY to survive. And before we forget, use guys!
Use guys!